This is Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Global outbreak, the latest on COVID-19.
207, welcome to Ottawa Now. It is Wednesday, April the 29th, and there is a lot going on as we bid goodbye to that beautiful April weather that we were having. That spring-like weather, unfortunately, couldn't last forever, and now we're headed into rain for the next couple of days, so says Environment Canada. So right now it's 16 degrees out there. Pretty nice start to the day, but we're expecting the showers to begin this afternoon. And then, unfortunately, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, we've got rain. 60% chance of rain. So get ready, pull out the rubber boots, find the raincoat if you're like me and you have to walk the dog or you're outside with the kids. Sunday looks a little bit better, up to 18 degrees actually, quite warm on Sunday, but still a chance of showers in the forecast. As we head into May, May 1st is on Friday. Feels like time has all at once, it's done two things. It feels like time has both been paralyzed, time has stood still, and yet it's moved very quickly. Because I can't believe I've been broadcasting from home now since around March 14th. I believe it was March 14th, but I'll check back and just clarify that date. It's been a long time, but it also feels like the blink of an eye. I don't know if you identify with that. Let me know. Lots coming up on the show today. Manitoba has unveiled its reopening plan. May 4th is a big date as they allow some businesses to reopen. We know Quebec is moving towards reopening, Saskatchewan as well. We'll compare and contrast the different approaches between Ontario and the other provinces. I know the Premier Brian Pallister in Manitoba is saying it's going to be a phased approach that will begin May 4th, and that's what all the provinces have agreed upon. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau today, that's where we'll start the show, said that the modeling we've seen presented so far is promising. He says the curve has flattened in many provinces, but people need to stick to it.
The good news is that Canadians are stepping up to keep each other safe. In fact, in many parts of the country, the curve has flattened, so we have to keep it up. We're seeing some progress because people from coast to coast to coast are making sacrifices and following public health rules. So let's stick to it. Let's stay home, wash our hands, and when we go out, let's stay 2 meters away from others.
So the provinces and territories did come to somewhat of an agreement. Obviously, every single place has a different situation. Saskatchewan, a lot more rural than Ontario, a lot smaller. Different number of cases, fewer cases indeed. But the guidelines we've agreed upon as a country, coast to coast, follow the same criteria. And the idea is, even if we're under a different set of circumstances, the province will be on the same page as other provinces, following the same measures when we do ease into restrictions, when we do ease out, rather, of restrictions. So today, Manitoba announced some businesses will open May 4th with strict guidelines. One of the steps that all the provinces have agreed upon when it comes to reopening is having sufficient public health capacity to test, to trace, and to have workplace protocols in place. Today at his daily address, the Prime Minister also announced something else.
Starting this weekend in Nova Scotia, the Canadian Forces Snowbirds will head across Canada to salute Canadians doing their part to stop the spread of COVID-19. As we watch the snowbirds fly over our homes, let's remember that we are all in this together.
So that will be happening over the weekend. Meantime, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau is asked about the CFL. The CFL has asked for help. The Canadian Football League is asking the federal government for $150 million in financial assistance. The CFL commissioner told the Canadian press yesterday that the league's proposal involves three phases. $30 million they say they need now to manage the impact of the novel coronavirus, and then some additional assistance for what would be a shorter regular season. They say, like many other businesses across Canada, they're facing financial pressure unlike anything they've ever seen before. They say, best case scenario, they have to cancel some games. Worst case scenario, if the crisis persists, if they lose the entire season, they say the losses that they lose would be devastating. And he said if the entire season is wiped out, the future of the CFL at all would be in jeopardy. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau was asked about it, and he said this.
We are continuing to engage with various sectors, industries, and organizations who are facing disruptions because of COVID-19. The CFL has approached us about support. We know it's important to them. We know it's important to many Canadians, and those discussions are ongoing.
COVID-19 infections as well in this country are not just disrupting sport. They're disrupting the food supply. Canada's food sector as well. And I was reading a great deal about this earlier today. The meat processing industry in the United States and in Canada right now is being disrupted because what's happening is employees, people at food processing plants, meat packing plants are getting sick. And then these plants have to shut down. So in Alberta, there's a number of plants that have had to shut down. There's one in High River that supplies 30 to 40% of Canada's meat. And so as food processors fall sick, the plant shuts down. The number of cases at that plant alone in High River, 759 cases among the workers. As a result of that, McDonald's Canada says it has to import beef. It needs a steady supply of meat. In the United States, they're having the same problem. About a third of the nation's pork capacity is shut down, to the point where last night, the American president, Donald Trump, had to order meat processing plants to remain open. The prime minister here was asked if Canada's going to have to do the same thing.
We understand how important it is to ensure the supply of food to Canadians right across the country. And we're watching with interest and concern some of the issues facing meat producers and the supply chain across the agricultural industry. We need to make sure that those supply chains can keep functioning, but we also need to make sure that the people who work in those supply chains and will continue to need to work in difficult circumstances over the coming weeks and months as we continue to battle COVID-19 are kept safe.
In the United States, at least 79 food processing and meat packing plants have reported cases of COVID-19, and that was as of Monday. So you can imagine the number may have gone up since then. This is thousands of workers we're talking about. Some of them have died from the coronavirus. Thousands of them have been directly impacted by it. And as some plants in the United States have shut down, others are struggling to remain open. Now, according to the Center for Disease Control, because I was looking this up, is there a risk that food that comes from some of these food processing plants could be tainted with COVID-19? Could you catch it? The CDC, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention in the United States, says no. Experts generally say that COVID-19 is transmitted by droplets. But you think about the workers that are at these plants. If one person gets it, how quickly it spreads. What impact is it going to have on them? And will some of them even go to work? If the meat processing plants are open, do they want to go to work? Do they feel motivated to go to work? Or will they just call it and say, no way, I'm not putting my health and safety on the line, I'm staying home. Here in Canada, with plants shutting down, what does it mean for food supply? The plant that I mentioned in High River, as well as a different plant in southern Alberta, so two plants where dozens of workers have tested positive, together supply about two-thirds of Canada's beef. So what does it mean for the selection of meat at the grocery store? What does it mean for the price? We'll chat with Sylvain Charlebois, who is from Dalhousie University. He's known as the food professor, and he'll join us coming up. We'll talk about that. A look at the numbers in Canada today. As we zoom out, there are over 50,000 cases of people infected with COVID-19 here in our country. 2,859 people have died, but close to 20,000 people have recovered. And actually, in Ontario today, the number of new confirmed cases has dropped substantially. There are only 347 new cases reported today. And I say only, not to be callous, because any case of COVID-19 we should take seriously. These are people's lives on the line. But this is good news because that is the lowest single day case number that we've seen in 3 weeks. It's the first time in several weeks where we've seen a total that was in the 300s. So the question is whether it's a fluke or it's a pattern. is this a little dip? And then, you know, tomorrow the numbers go back up again and we start to see numbers, 500, 600 new cases, or does this trend continue? And we know for Ontario to reopen the economy, it cannot be a blip. The Health Minister, Christine Elliott, has been clear about that. She said, we have to see data over time that is a downward trend. Premier Doug Ford today was welcoming the numbers.
The good news is we saw a trend. We saw a trend yesterday. It's a trend that actually has seen the needle start going southward. It's the lowest amount of cases we've seen over the last 3 weeks. And this is a positive trend to give people hope that we're getting close to opening up. I can't give you dates right now, but what I can give you is hope that we're getting closer. Day after day, when we see positive trends going down, we'll make sure that that's going to be closer to the day we open up.
People are starting to ask the Premier, when are we going to do what Manitoba is doing? When are we going to do what Saskatchewan is doing? Earlier today, Manitoba Premier Brian Pallister, as I mentioned, announced the reopening of some non-essential businesses.
Today, I am pleased to announce that effective Monday, May 4th, a number of non-essential businesses will be able to open their doors. These will include non-urgent health services, dentists, orthodontics, and physiotherapists. As well, and I know this will be a great relief to many Manitobans, we will be able to reopen elective surgeries. I know many Manitobans have been patiently waiting for important procedures to be done, and I know it's been difficult for you, and I thank you for your patience. We'll also ease restrictions on outdoor recreation, such as playgrounds, golf courses, campgrounds. We encourage Manitobans to continue practicing physical distancing and safely enjoy our beautiful outdoors while we continue to move through the phases of this pandemic.
So hair salons, dentists, patios can reopen in Manitoba starting on Monday. But the Premier said there is no place for complacency. He said a lot of people will interpret this as, yay, we're going back to normal. It's not normal. It's the new normal. So he's urging caution in Manitoba as they move toward that. But it is good news. Saskatchewan is moving toward reopening as well. And Quebec, our neighbor, which is actually much worse than Ontario, they've got a worse situation than Ontario, they are reopening as well. The province will begin removing some police checkpoints on May 4th. So Premier Doug Ford was asked about this today, and he said, we're not Quebec.
Well, we're providing a glimmer of hope every single day when we see the numbers and the trend go down, to the exception of a couple days ago. We're seeing the trend go down, so there is hope. And we're going to give people hope, but I'm not willing to roll the dice. And we aren't Quebec, and we aren't Manitoba and Saskatchewan. And I love the premiers, all three of them, actually. They're doing an incredible job. But Saskatchewan has a couple of million people. We have 14 and a half million people. We have an urban center with the GTA, over 6 million people. So I just ask people, they hang in there. We're seeing a trend. We're going to get there. There's going to be positive news if we continue on this trend.
So Quebec has announced it's going to gradually remove those police controls. They've been limiting travel within the province of Quebec for some time now, since March. And now they're going to be gradually removing them. The deputy premier says the police roadblocks will begin to be removed on May 4th. That is on Monday. However, the Outaouais region, with the exception of Gatineau, will reopen May 11th. It's not clear why that doesn't include Gatineau, but the Outaouais region will reopen May 11th. When the premier was asked about Quebec's approach and what he thinks of it, he said, I'm not going to make a judgment. Quebec does what it needs to do, but here in Ontario, we need to stay the course.
I love Quebecers. I love people from Manitoba, but stay at home. You know, and that same goes for the U.S. as well. Stay at home. It's nothing personal. We can't afford the spread of this virus here in Ontario. We're doing so well. So I'll emphasize it again. If you don't live in Ontario, stay at home. When this is over, we welcome you in open arms, but we just can't risk it. So again, I emphasize to the people that don't live in Ontario, We welcome you at another time, but we just can't have you into our province at this point.
But what does that mean for us here in Ottawa? That's what I'm wondering. When many Quebec businesses are reopening gradually through the month of May, when they are going to be getting rid of these police checkpoints, shopping malls are going to remain closed for the time being. Same with restaurants, hairdressers, museums, concert venues. But as they're gradually reopening some businesses, places that have outdoor entrances, construction and civil engineering companies, manufacturing companies, plants, factories, that's a big move. The entire construction center in Quebec is going to reopen as of May 12th. That is a big sector. So what does it mean for us on this side of the river? What does it mean for Ottawa? Mayor Jim Watson was asked, are we going to be watching people coming into Ottawa from Quebec? And he said, no, it's a waste of resources. We know that that's not an idea that the mayor is interested in, but is there a concern that people may move across the river? People treat Ottawa-Gatineau like it's one place. And I'm not trying to fearmonger here. I'm not suggesting that we need a police state with people stopping everyone, but it is something to consider that people work in one place. People often try to go over to Quebec even just to hike. And I know that Gatineau Park right now is not a place that you can go and hike, but it's still a very pretty area. People like to drive across the river. Is it a concern that people will be coming from Quebec into Ottawa? Is that something we need to be worried about? Also today, the government announced it's expanding the list of essential service workers who are eligible for emergency childcare.
And I'm proud that Ontario will support more frontline workers today by expanding that list of individuals who are eligible to receive emergency childcare in this province. And the list includes staff in grocery stores and pharmacies, those that work in retirement homes, Ontario truckers, the Canadian Armed Forces, and those that support Canadians who are deaf or hard of hearing. While we are expanding those that are eligible, we've heightened our strict health and safety protocols for those centers under the consultation of the local medical officer of health. This phase expansion is supported by the Chief Medical Officer of Health, knowing that we have put in place strict guidelines and protocols and that we have taken a zero tolerance approach when it comes to keeping kids safe.
So there you go. They're expanding the number of people that can get childcare. The list of workers to get childcare now includes meat packers, grocery store employees, among others. So that is interesting. In Ontario right now, things sound optimistic, right? But there are a lot of questions, and we'll talk about that today. Are the numbers we're seeing truly a pattern? At what point do we declare the numbers are low enough to move into phase one of the plan to reopen the economy? And what about the dire situation in long-term care homes? Right now, we have 181 long-term care homes that have outbreaks in our province. While Ontario is having a good day, Ottawa is not. For the second straight day, Ottawa Public Health is reporting the largest one-day jump in COVID-19 cases, 76 new cases of COVID-19 here in our city, and another OC Transpo driver that just tested positive for COVID-19. So we'll stay on top of that today.
You'll never find another like me.
You're listening to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA.
You're the only one of you. Baby, that's the fun of you. And I promise that nobody's gonna love you like me.
Welcome back to Ottawa Now. I was reading an interesting article earlier on today about Airbnb owners in the United States that have a whole slew of properties, people that buy up a bunch of properties and then they rent them out for way more than they would get if they had regular tenants, right? Because there's only a certain amount that you can feasibly get from people that actually know what the rent value is in the city. They're not going to rent from you if your rent is sky high. And so you can make a lot more when you have short-term renters. So instead, they go for short-term rentals. They buy up a bunch of properties, condos, homes, and then they rent them out. And then they use that as an income property. And it was quick, easy money. Every single week, every couple of days, they'd have new renters coming in on Airbnb, and they were making a killing. Now, with COVID-19 in the middle of the pandemic, They're just getting cancellations every single day. And this woman in the article was saying the ding on my cell phone used to mean that I had another $500, $600 bucks coming in. Now it's just people canceling. And there are a bunch of landlords. There are a bunch of people that used to be very lucrative Airbnb owners that would host people that are now not able to make their mortgages. They're not able to pay them because they were reliant on that money coming in. It's an absolute disaster. Coming up, we'll talk about the meatpacking plants in Alberta that are shut off or running reduced lines due to the pandemic. Dr. Sylvain Charlebois will join us. We'll find out what it means for you at the grocery store. That's coming up next. I'm a sucker for all the subliminal things no one knows
about you. You're listening to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Global outbreak, the latest on COVID-19.
2:36, welcome back to the show. Hope you're keeping safe and sane. Whatever you're doing, baking, running, sewing, everyone seems to have picked up some sort of hobby when we're in lockdown. So I hope you're enjoying it and that it's keeping you healthy. Speaking of healthy and fueling yourself using nutrition as a way to keep yourself healthy, a lot of people are wondering about the price of meat. COVID-19 infections are now disrupting parts of Canada's food sector, including the meat processing industry. Meatpacking plants in Alberta are shut down, or some of them are running reduced lines because of staff outbreaks. So as a result, McDonald's Canada says it's going to import beef. The plant that I mentioned earlier in High River supplies 30 to 40% of Canada's meat. At last count yesterday, that plant had 759 cases of COVID in the working population. Meantime, in the U.S., it's a problem as well, to the point where President U.S. Donald Trump last night ordered meat processing plants to remain open. Our Prime Minister was asked today if Canada is going to do the same thing.
We understand how important it is to ensure the supply of food to Canadians right across the country. And we're watching with interest and concern some of the issues facing meat producers and the supply chain across the agricultural industry. We need to make sure that those supply chains can keep functioning, but we also need to make sure that the people who work in those supply chains and will continue to need to work in difficult circumstances over the coming weeks and months as we continue to battle COVID-19 are kept safe.
The Prime Minister was pressed on this by reporters who said, well, hold on, just a few weeks ago, you said you weren't concerned about the food supply chain in Canada. Now, obviously, we are concerned about it. What is your exact plan? And should Canadians be bracing for other shortages in different industries?
We know that this pandemic is unprecedented and its impacts are far-reaching on our daily lives, on many different industries. We are working very closely with the agricultural industry to ensure that people get good, healthy food, particularly as we embark upon the summer where there will be a need and an ability to get lots of fresh vegetables and produce from across the country. We need to ensure that we're able to provide for that. We're working with provinces. We're working with the sector. Agricultural Canada is very much on this issue. We need to continue to stay vigilant because of the large disruptions across many different sectors in our country, including, obviously, agriculture.
How wide-reaching will the impact be? How far will it be felt? Joining us now, the food professor, Dr. Sylvain Charlebois. He's a professor of food distribution and policy at Dalhousie University. I know the shutdown of these plants can cause a ripple effect, doctor, throughout Canada's food supply chain. What do you think is going to happen?
Well, first of all, I want to make sure that people are aware that we won't have any shortages anytime soon. We are talking about an incredible amount of capacity federally. Both Brooks and High River represent about 70% of beef processing in Canada, but that's federally licensed beef processing. We still have provincial abattoirs across the country, including Ontario, And so there's beef there. And of course, in Ontario, there's Guelph, still in operation, owned and operated by Cargill. In terms of inventories, of course, the situation is becoming critical, of course, because you can't really have shutdowns without seeing any effects. We are probably going to start seeing some a bit of an impact. But chicken and pork, those two types of meat are doing well. Plants are still doing well. The big challenge right now is High River in Alberta. We don't know when it's going to reopen, which is why McDonald's decided to start buying beef elsewhere, because all of its beef typically is processed out of High River, and that's why they had no other choice. They were waiting for the White House to make the decision to force companies in the U.S. to keep meat packing plants open in the U.S., and an hour later, literally an hour later, McDonald's Canada announced that they were starting to buy beef from the United States. So that's where we're at right now. But it doesn't mean if McDonald's has decided to buy beef from the U.S., it doesn't mean that we're running out of beef. It just means that McDonald's ran out of beef.
Mm. Right. But when do you think we will see an impact at the grocery store, not with a chicken or pork, but with beef? When do you think we will start to actually notice that?
I'd say, so looking at, so they closed the plant, I think, a week ago today. I wasn't expecting a whole lot of disruptions if the closure would have lasted, say, 2 weeks. But we haven't heard anything out of that plant, and there's still a lot of cases coming out of that plant. So if the plant remains closed for beyond next Wednesday, I would say we should start seeing inventories getting low in parts of the country. I'm just not sure about Ottawa, to be honest, because you do have Guelph, and Guelph services a big part of Ontario. In the Atlantic here, in fact, a lot of the beef we actually get is from the U.S., so we're not going to be affected all that much. So the markets that could be affected by what's going on in High River is parts of Quebec, parts of Ontario, the prairies, and B.C.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. So eventually you do feel this is going to have an impact, maybe less selection, the higher prices. What does it say, though? This is one plant that we're talking about in High River, and the other plant that you mentioned. But what does it say about the fact that this can get into these food processing plants? It can infect hundreds of employees. It can lead to the shutdown of these plants. What does it mean for other food processing places?
To be honest, I'm not overly concerned because, first of all, High River is 31 years old. Brooks, run by GBS, is 45 years old. These are plants, they've been retrofitted, but they weren't ready to accommodate something like a pandemic where physical distancing was critical in a plant. I've actually visited those two plants years ago and was asked to be involved in investigation of the 2012 food recall coming out of Brooks. They're not young plants. But when you visit other plants, newer plants, like the one in Hamilton run by Maple Leaf, that's 2 years old. Haven't heard anything from that plant. Chicken with Maple Leaf in Brampton, it got affected by COVID. It closed for a couple of days. It got reopened. It's in operation now. Yamashish with Ali Mel in Quebec closed for 2 weeks. It's now back in and it's running again. So these are protocols, and companies are doing a great job mitigating risks. The challenge in High River, and I'm going back to beef here, there's a particular culture with cattle and beef that needs to be underscored here, a culture of resilience and supremacy. And that's probably why it took so long for them to close that plant to figure things out. But it was too late. And that's why things are a little bit out of control in both places, Brooks and High River, and they're trying to figure out how to contain the risks.
Mm-hmm. So just to be clear, your take on this is, yes, there are meat plants in Canada that are affected by the coronavirus outbreak, but you're optimistic this won't turn into anything serious.
Let's say, hypothetically, that all federally licensed manufacturing plants, meat packing plants, are affected by COVID. Let's say, okay? There's about 100 of them across the country, all right? Let's say that, hypothetically, all of them are hit. Still, I wouldn't be concerned, because companies will just shut things down, clean the place up, make sure that employees are go into quarantine properly for 2 weeks, and they'll go back to work as soon as possible. The one thing that is changing right now are protocols around worker mobility outside the plant, how they get to work, with whom, who they live with. Migrant workers live together, and that's being addressed right now in High River, Brooks, and elsewhere as well.
In the United States, President Donald Trump has signed an executive order invoking the Defense Production Act to classify meat processing plants as essential infrastructure that must remain open. What do you think about that?
It's America. Americans have a peculiar relationship with meat. They've had riots for meat in their history. I would say this. It would be absolutely un-Canadian to do the same thing in Canada, given the fact that lives are at stake here, employees, communities. I'm not sure people would want Ottawa to do the exact same thing, given it's a pandemic and it kills people.
So finally, Professor, before we finish, what would your advice be to people listening right now that are concerned about this? They're looking at the news that these meat processing plants are impacted. They're concerned about Canada's food supply chain. What would you say?
So don't panic. When you go to the grocery store, food will be waiting for you, even at the meat counter. It's not going to be perfect, but some products will be there. And if a cut you want is not there, come back the following week. It'll probably be there.
All right. Sylvain Charlebois, thank you for coming on the show.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Dr. Sylvain Charlebois is a professor of food distribution and policy at Dalhousie University. This is the stuff that he's focused on, and he says don't panic. So there you have it. 2:48 coming up on the show, the Germ Guy, microbiology expert and author of The Germ Code, Jason Tetreault, will join us. And we'll talk about the vaccine that researchers around the globe have been tirelessly working to develop. Are we getting closer? What happens if we just never get a COVID-19 vaccine? The Prime Minister was saying earlier this week, unfortunately, we're still a long way away. We're not even thinking about what the protocols will be right now, because we haven't gotten to the point where we're manufacturing a vaccine. We need to find a vaccine first. We'll talk about that. Right now, 2:48.
Action. You're listening to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA.
2:52. Welcome back to Ottawa Now. In just a moment, we'll tell you why Trolls World Tour has become one of the most controversial movies of the year. Yes. I'm talking about the rainbow-colored kids flick, Trolls World Tour. You're not confused. But we are playing Oscars music. We are playing Hollywood music because the Oscars has had to make changes already to next year's show. They're going to consider films that didn't play in theaters as part of new Academy rules. Joining me right now to talk about it, I've got movie critic and host of CTV's Pop Life, Richard Krause. Hello, Richard. How are you?
Good, Christy. How are you?
Not too bad. Watching a lot more movies than I used to, that's for sure.
I'm sure you are. I think we all are. Anywhere that you can find your entertainment, and there's some cool stuff that's happening. I know this isn't what we're talking about, but there's all kinds of cool movies being put on YouTube by the right people. They're not bootlegs. They're companies that are putting out entertainment for free on YouTube to help people get through these rough times. Like, Mongrel Media is doing a really cool series on Friday nights at 6 o'clock where Jamie Lee Curtis hosts them, and they talk about the movies, and then you get to see a cool movie for free. I think it's John Wick this week. So if you're interested, look up Mongrel Media on YouTube, and there they are.
Oh, that sounds like a lot of fun. There's also, this is crazy, I was reading this in the Ottawa Citizen, there's a local couple and their family in Carleton Place. They're pretty good at making movies. They decided to have their three kids star in a pandemic thriller. And it's kind of like Home Alone. The kids are left and apparently their parents are trapped in Toronto by the pandemic lockdown, and then things go sideways from there. And it's a 12-minute movie that this family made themselves. Pretty
That's
neat.
Awesome. Yeah, I think we're going to be seeing a lot more of those, not just from families, but from filmmakers and everybody else as this becomes the main thing, the only thing that anyone is thinking about these days. So I'm sure it'll filter into the movies.
So let's talk about the change to the Oscars. Is this just a product of circumstance, I guess, because nobody can actually go to the movie theater right now?
It is a product of circumstance. It is temporary. The Academy has released a statement that says that they firmly believe there is no greater way to experience the magic of movies than to see them in a theater. That being said, you can't see anything in the theater. So if they stick with their old rule that a movie has to play on a screen in New York and Los Angeles for at least a week in that calendar year to be eligible for an Academy Award, there won't be an Academy Awards in February because there will be virtually no movies. If this drought goes on, or the plague goes on, we won't be in the movie theaters for a couple of months anyway, and right now so many of the big movies have moved themselves into next year that there's not that much that will happen for the rest of this year. So it's the right thing to do for them, but it's not permanent. It is only until the theaters open again, and then once theaters are open, movies will then have to go back to the old rule where they have to play on a screen for a week, but they've expanded the amount of cities that they can do that in. So the movies have four or five opportunities now, whereas before they only had really two if it was a smaller film.
That being said, the pandemic, like everything else, Hollywood has really been changed by the pandemic. And it, instead of the traditional theatrical window that they'd have where big movies would simply be on the theater screen, now they're being streamed right into people's homes. And, you know, I think that that has made a big impact.
It's made a huge impact. I think that where you will see the biggest impact will be for kids' entertainment. Because as the weather gets nicer, as homeschooling becomes more and more onerous for people, as kids get a little edgier and want to be out in the park, you've got to find a way to keep them, you know, busy and, you know, inside, I suppose, as much as possible. And, you know, what better way than to flick on a movie? And that's what happened with the Trolls movie a few weeks ago when they went direct to streaming with a movie that was meant to go direct to the big screen.
Yeah.
And it worked. It made over $100 million, and it's an enormous hit. Now, who knows what it would have made in the theaters? I suspect it probably would have made about the same amount of money, but there's far less overhead if you go direct to streaming than there is if you go the theatrical route. You don't need posters, for instance. You don't have to make what they call DCPs, which are what most movie theaters play now, the electronic copies of the film. There's all that stuff, all those costs that are just simply eliminated. And so Universal liked this idea. AMC, mm-hmm. the biggest chain in the U.S., does not like this idea.
Oh, yeah, it ruffled some feathers, to say mm-hmm. the least.
Yeah, there's a feud brewing here. And, I mean, there has been a feud coming for some time now because the big studios, with the advent of streaming becoming more and more popular and just home entertainment in general becoming more and more popular and Netflix and everything else, they've wanted to slim down the window between theatrical release and the home release because movies sitting around after it plays in the theaters for 6 months, just sitting around on a shelf, not playing on Netflix, not being released on DVD, whatever, it's not making any money. And the theaters, on the other hand, want these movies to go into hibernation for a while because when they can advertise, you know, that this experience is one you can only get in theaters, they think that it brings people into their theaters to enjoy the movies there. If you know that you can go see a movie a week after it's played in the movie theater, you're not as incentivized to get up off your couch and go to the theater. So this has been going on for some time. Universal has been making a lot of noise in the last week or so since Trolls World Tour made so much money that they're going to really consider this as a model moving forward. And AMC is not happy about it. And frankly, the two people, the two big companies, Universal and AMC, they'll figure this out. What upsets everybody is that it puts the theater workers in the middle. They're out of work right now because all the theaters are closed, and if Universal decides for some reason that they won't come back and play movies in those theaters, it means less jobs for people.
Mm. And just finally, before I let you go, I know you love the experience of going to a theater. We all do. But like other things, I think that will be reevaluated, like fitness studios, hair salons, sure, grocery shopping, everything. And I wonder when theaters do reopen, if we space people every other chair, and if people do go running back or if they're scared.
I think that it will depend on what movies are playing, to be quite honest. I think that people will go see the James Bond movie. If it plays in November, I believe people will go see it. I think that by the time we get to, 2 or 3 months from now or more, I think that people will be so desperate to be normalized in some way that they might, you know, they'll go to the theater. Then now they might wear a mask.
Sure.
They might be a bit more cautious about what they touch. They might not buy popcorn, whatever else. But I do think that people will, by and large, just, you know, it's human nature. I think that people want to try and make things as normal as possible for themselves. You know, it will depend on what you think is safe. It's a decision mm-hmm. that each and every person will have to make for themselves.
Yeah, I think it's right. It's also human nature that we like to be together. And Richard, one of the experiences that I miss in a movie theater is when you watch a comedy and you don't really find something that funny, but it tickles somebody in the row behind you and they let out this guffaw. Yep. And then you're laughing more at the audience member behind you than you are.
The best part of going to see a movie is the communal aspect of it. The storytelling is great. We love that. We like to see movie stars, all that stuff. But it's the reaction from the stranger sitting in the dark with you, the mm-hmm. laughing, the crying, the yelling, whatever it might be. That's what makes movies great. They affect a lot of people on a really visceral, primal kind of level, and it's wired into our DNA to sit in the dark and watch something in front of us as a community and a group.
Well said, Richard Krause. We are missing the movie theaters, and great to hear your voice. Great to have you on the show. Stay well. Appreciate it.
You too, Christy. Thank you.
Richard Krause, host of CTV's Pop Life and movie critic. It is 3:00. We'll be right back after the news with Zach McGibbon.